6 months into the pandemic, and although there is still no treatment or still no cure, life seems to be getting back to normal for many people. This is Lisa Berry, and the just-announced return of Big Ten football may be good news for some people, but not necessarily to the medical experts. Dr. Howard Markell is a physician, author, and medical historian at the University of Michigan, and has watched closely and written about our global health crisis extensively, including a recent piece in The New Yorker. So we're honored to have him join us here now on 89.1 WEMU. How are you doing, Dr. Markell?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
What team will you be rooting for in late October when Big Ten football resumes?
The team of safety. The team of health.
So you think it's a good idea?
No, absolutely not. Look, let's preface it. I fully understand how many people love Big Ten football.
Right.
It's an important part of their recreational life and their enjoyment. I get that. I feel the same way about Major League Baseball, for example. But we are in the pandemic crisis, not only of our generation, but hopefully of our century. It's like no other. And the crowding of people, or even the crowding of athletes on the field, even if there's no audience, puts people at risk. And, of course, these football players, these Big Ten football players, are students. And I realize that the notion of the student-athlete is just that, notional. But they are young men who are here to go to college. They are not professionals. They are not being paid. And I think we have to realize that football is an entertainment, just like going to the movies or baseball, what have you. And in times of a pandemic crisis where a terrible virus is easily spread by close contact and breathing and sneezing, even when you're outdoors, this is not the time for this activity.
But we need something. I'm just saying what the people who are excited about this are thinking. And they said they're going to have rapid testing. You don't think there's any way, and I'm pretty sure they're not going to let people in to the stadium to watch the games.
Yeah, well, it's just fraught with problems. I mean, I don't know how rapid the testing will be. That hasn't been articulated, and that's why they have not actually set a schedule. The technology, whether it's vaccines or medical treatments or testing, is several steps behind the rhetoric and the speechifying. I know people need something. You know, I'm just saying, you're asking me as a doctor, not
right.
as a fan, not as a player, as a doctor, you know what I'm going to say. I'm not going to say go out there and interact with people right now. Just not. And, you know, somebody would come and take my stethoscope away. And, yeah, well, having said this on the air, someone might throw eggs at my house. But Let's be serious. This is a time of a health crisis, and it is just too risky. Simple as that. And as we're learning, you know, not only how sick people get with COVID, but 10% of those people get a post-COVID syndrome of symptoms and inflammation and problems with their brain, their heart, their kidneys. This is not an infection you want to contract.
So let's talk about risks. What is everyone doing? Life seems to be getting back to normal for a lot of people. And I'm wondering, is that advisable from your position?
No. I mean, I think, you know, we're still hiding from the virus. We don't have a vaccine. It is still, you know, up and down, but going out there. There's about 1,000 deaths in the United States every day. There are anywhere from 40 to 60,000 new cases, and we're clearly not testing everyone, so we don't really know what that universe is. As the weather gets colder, the COVID-19 virus is likely, but we don't know for a fact yet, but it is likely to propagate and spread even more easily. So we're not out of the woods yet. Every expert is saying this. Tony Fauci, the head of the CDC, every expert that I listen to and read and study has said that this is going to go on probably for another year, maybe. We should lower our expectations and keep ourselves as safe as possible. I think the reason why people are going out is that we all crave normal life.
Right.
I mean, this is not fun.
Right.
There's nothing normal about this.
It just takes one exposure, no matter how safe you think you're being, to possibly get COVID-19? That's a risk?
Well, yeah. I mean, maybe not one exposure, maybe two. It depends on your health, depends on your pre-existing conditions. All the social distancing does is risk reduction. Okay, you're reducing the odds that you may meet somebody who is infectious, whether they're asymptomatic and a carrier or actually has the disease but are pre-symptomatic. So you're lowering risk, but you can never lower risk to absolute zero. You know, there's these issues that we've talked about, the three D's, you know, duration. How much time are you spending with other people? What is the distance you are when you interact with other people? And the diversity, how many different people you are interacting with. So going to the supermarket and interacting with a great many people, if they're not wearing masks, is a higher risk than going to a store where there's only one person who is wearing a mask. But you're never reducing your risk to absolute zero. And it is not a perfect defense by any means. It's really like layers of Swiss cheese. You know, you're doing this, you're doing that, and hopefully the many layers cover up the holes. But there's still little tiny crevices where that virus can get in. So, the more you social distance, the safer you will be. But it's there's no absolutes here.
Let's talk about vaccines. How hopeful are you that a vaccine is what we need to end this situation right now?
Well, I'm very hopeful. I do not think we'll get a vaccine by Christmas. I think we have to be very careful how we test it, how we manufacture it, and then how people get the vaccine, how it's organized and orchestrated. The logistics are remarkable. But this is the silver bullet that is going to get us out of this. The more people who roll up their sleeves, and that is our individual responsibility. It's not just the government that has to pay billions of dollars to the vaccine makers or the vaccine makers and scientists who have to create a safe vaccine. It's up to us to all get vaccinated and become immune to this horrible virus. Right now, they're even predicting that a vaccine may only be 50% effective.
Right.
You know, not all vaccines are 90, 95% effective, like the polio vaccine, for example, is that effective. But, you know, flu vaccines are about 40 to 60% effective most years. But it's still better to have some coverage than no coverage. And we may wind up in a situation where we need booster vaccines down the road, you know, getting a shot on day one, and then maybe 6 to 12 weeks later getting a booster shot. We may need them annually, like we get our flu shots, and everybody should get one. I just got mine yesterday. But that will be revealed to us. But the point is that we need a vaccine desperately.
How did the pandemic of 1918 end, and is there any chance that that's how this is going to end as well? Can you compare the two?
Well, I get that question a lot, and, you know, flu virus tends to like cold weather. We're not quite sure why, but it tends to propagate most during the cold weather, and that's why we start giving flu vaccine in late September, October, preparing for the winter. And what happened in 1918 to 1919 is that it just kind of went quiet at the end of April, by the beginning of May of 1919, and then didn't reappear, by the way, until January of 1920. No one talks about that wave of the flu pandemic of 1918 to 1919, but it was an integral part of it, and a lot of people got sick, and it was the same strain, H1N1. But flu tends to go quiet in the warm weather. You know, a lot of people, including me, and I was wrong, thought that coronavirus, too, would go quiet once the warm weather came. That certainly happened with SARS in 2003. On the other hand, with the coronavirus that caused Middle East respiratory syndrome, that occurred in relatively warm weather. And as we've seen over the summer, it's been quite active. And I do worry that it will be more active in the winter. So will it burn itself out? I mean, most viruses tend to do that, but the most predictable thing about this novel coronavirus pandemic is its unpredictability. So I really don't. I can't answer your question, unfortunately.
Okay, how about as a writer, as an author, how would you write the end of this pandemic of COVID-19?
Well, selfishly, I would hope that we would have an incredible vaccine that was incredibly effective, that we developed the logistics and manufacturing to get it to as many Americans as we could, the elderly, the poor, the disenfranchised, everyone, and that we would celebrate that great achievement with immunity to COVID, just as we celebrated the Salk vaccine in 1955. I'd like to see bells ringing and fireworks going off and make this a great triumph, to pull triumph out of this disaster and then move on to life as we knew it.
Dr. Howard Markel from the University of Michigan, thanks again for talking to us here on 89.1 WEMU. We always appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.